Blog Talk Radio.
The NBA just got so much more interesting. So much more interesting after the NBA finals. You remember when, like, midway through the season, there was all this talk about impending free agency, what the big names were going to do, namely Kevin Durant, all the rumors about him going to the New York Knicks, and the reports out there about him going to the Knicks. And earlier in the season, you had the dust up with him and Draymond on the court, Draymond doubting his commitment to the team, Durant's commitment, that is. And in a lot of ways, we were orchestrating these storylines about free agency, storylines that were, to be clear, coming. These are storylines that were going to be relevant, but just weren't relevant at the time. But we were doing that anyway. You remember that? Well, now it's here. Now we have actual things to discuss. We have actual results and implications and possibilities. Like, this just got so much more interesting. I should start by congratulating the Toronto Raptors on their first franchise championship, the first NBA championship in franchise history, done in impressive fashion, as has been chronicled on this podcast before. I did not believe in this Raptors team at any point. It wasn't until actually we saw how Kawhi outplayed Giannis in the conference finals, in the Eastern Conference finals, when I finally thought, you know what, this Raptors team might actually be better than I could have ever given it credit for. So seriously, congratulations to that franchise. Not that they need it from me. The championship itself is enough. And the memories themselves are enough, I'm sure. But I have to say that I'm glad to be wrong in this situation, because I have enjoyed watching the Raptors prove me wrong. I've enjoyed watching the Raptors do things that I did not realize or understand that they were actually capable of. It's kind of cool. I don't mind being wrong here. So congratulations to them. But the finals are going to be far more reaching than I think what this Raptors team will ever be. It's very well possible that we won't see these Raptors again. It's possible that this is a one-and-done, flash-in-the-pan, cool story bro type of thing. These could be not even the 04 Pistons, because they were together for a while. They went to the finals of the next year. Is that right? Yeah, they went to the finals the next year and lost to the Spurs. And this could be it for the Raptors. They lose Kawhi Leonard, and this thing basically starts all over again, which I'm sure, as a fan base, as a franchise and organization, I'm sure they would take that trade. They clearly would, because that's what they did. They traded for Kawhi, knowing that he might not stay past this year, going all in on this season, hoping that they would at least be impressive enough to show Kawhi something, to interest him in staying. And lo and behold, it worked out in the best way possible. But I'm sure this deal was done with the idea that Kawhi might not be coming back. They might only get 1 year of this. And this is the best case scenario. So there are no losses here for Toronto, even if Kawhi leaves. He brought them the championship. Kind of like when LeBron left Cleveland, even though there was much more history and emotion tied to that. But you get what I'm saying? He won the championship. He can kind of go freely. I did what I was supposed to do, or what I kind of said I would do or wanted to do for this organization. I don't have to be here anymore. So the Raptors, this could be it. Like, we can discuss this. Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, Kyle Lowry's reputation for re-imaging, I should say. Serge Ibaka, Mark Gasol. I mean, there are things about the box and one. The idea that you would do a box and one as a defense in the NBA Finals and it not be out of desperation, you just do it just because, and it work, and not just against any old team, but one that made it to the Finals, one that has made it to the Finals 5 years in a row. You put a box and one on them and they can't figure it out. Like, plenty of stuff to discuss with the Raptors, but this is just so much bigger than that. We saw in Game 5 that Kevin Durant got hurt, and that was widely discussed. I didn't get on here and discuss it, at least my thoughts on who's to blame, whether anyone's to blame, what all that really means, if he was mistreated or mishandled. And that sort of thing. That was the discussion leading up to Game 6. That's the discussion with Kevin Durant and his future, or Kevin Durant's future, I should say, being a little bit somewhat in limbo. At least the immediate future. Kevin Durant has a torn Achilles. You know, a lot of people are trying to figure out who is to blame. What did Kevin Durant know exactly about his condition? How much did he agree to it? How much was he pressured into playing in Game 5? Did the Warriors brass and subsequently their medical staff screw this up? Did they rush this a little bit? Or were they too hasty in putting him out there given the severity of his prior injury with what we believed at the time, at least, and I guess it's still the party line, to have been a strained calf. And real quick, just my thought on that. I really don't have anyone to blame. Like, there is a case to be made, not just a case to be made, I think it's a fact that these medical staffs for the teams work in the best interest of the team and not the player. That's something that we just already know. It's especially that case in football. A big part of the contention with concussions and concussion protocol. And it was a big issue with the Kawhi Leonard fiasco in San Antonio, his distrust of the San Antonio medical staff and their diagnosis of his injury and their belief that he could play when he didn't think that, and he seemed to have other medical opinion, a different medical opinion that sided with his belief. We are not, this is not unfamiliar, the idea of a team of team doctors working in the interest of the team versus the player. And certainly you can look at this situation with Kevin Durant and glean from it that that's basically what happened here. That it appears to be what happened here. But with that, and this has been put in context by others, so I'm not going to be the first person that you hear say this, but this was the NBA Finals. This was the Golden State Warriors down 3-1 in the NBA Finals, missing their best player for several weeks at this point, facing elimination. This is the season on the line, legacy on the line, individually for Durant to some degree and for the Warriors. Like, these are the moments that you live for. These are the moments that you play for. Us as fans, media, observers, these are the moments that we live for. We, if we could help it, weren't missing that game as spectators. So imagine how Kevin Durant must feel. Imagine how the Warriors as an organization must feel. Imagine the pressure on everyone to make this work. This is what we're here for. So my thought is, if you're going to go out, if you're going to risk your career and your body to sacrifice it, if you're going to make what appears to be a haphazard decision and play on a torn or strained calf that can make your Achilles vulnerable, apparently, this is the game to do it. This is the game to lay it all out on the line. I can't tell you or overstate how surprised I was to see the alarm and the panic from everyone regarding this. And I get it, because we're familiar with medical staffs behaving in the best interest of the team or making decisions in the best interest of the team as opposed to the player. But, and that does appear to be in play here. But this just wasn't some regular season game, some random game, some random playoff game. It seems to me that they held off on bringing Kevin Durant for about as long as they felt like they could. And if the Raptors, or I should say if the Warriors, had gone on to win Game 6 and forced the Game 7, it would have seemed all the more worth it. Kevin Durant put up 11 points in 12 minutes in Game 5. The Warriors won the game by 1 point, and honestly, only won that game, perhaps secured that victory on a defensive play by Draymond Green getting a piece of that Kyle Lowry shot. No guarantee that Kyle Lowry hits that three in the corner to win the game and to win the finals in Toronto in Game 5, no guarantee. But without that Draymond block, and again, without the 11 points in 12 minutes that Kevin Durant put up, you don't get that far. The season's over before Thursday. It's over. And so in context, you have to also consider or just keep in mind, they did need Kevin Durant that game. They absolutely needed him. They needed him in every game of this series. Everyone. They only won one game without him. So I have a hard time really knocking anyone in this situation, because I'm not sure. I can't imagine knowing or believing that Kevin Durant could go out there and get you double digits. He's healthy enough. We don't know how many minutes he can play or should play exactly. We can maybe have a feel for it or feel it out once we get out there. But we think that Kevin Durant can go out there and give us 11 points minimum. At least he can score in double digits. We think he's healthy enough to at least get up and down the court and score in double digits in an NBA Finals game. I cannot think of the scenario where you don't put him out there. You talk about the risk and talk about what could happen and what could he's going to play. I remember Shaq, when he was playing, would say, and he was quoting his stepfather, who was like some type of drill sergeant or military guy. He would say that his stepdad told him, if you can walk, you can run, and if you can run, you can play. And at the time, I was a teenager when I heard that quote, and I was like, oh, man, that's hard. That's a good quote. Over time, I got older and thought, oh, that's actually kind of ridiculous. That's, you know, that's that gladiator nonsense that we probably should steer away from. But in this situation, I get it. We're talking about the NBA Finals. If you can walk, you can run. If you can run, you can play. I was not mad at any, and I'm still not mad at anybody for the decision to put Kevin Durant out there. I don't think it was like you can play the results if you want to. And a lot of people like to do this, like it's a result-based business and the results are the results. I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with it whatsoever. That being said, what's going to happen now? What's going to happen now? I said at the top of this, Kevin Durant in mid-season when there wasn't a lot to talk about with basketball, when everyone was bored with the regular season and ready for the playoffs to come and ready for free agency to come, apparently. Kevin Durant has been the marquee free agent. He's arguably the best player in the game and has the option to go pretty much wherever he'd like to go this season, this upcoming season. Most teams, and all the reporting since Durant's injury and since the end of the finals indicate that the Warriors are going to offer him the 5-year max deal, super max deal, and most teams would likely still do the same. But Kevin Durant's got torn Achilles, which basically puts him out for all of next season, which huge bummer, man. I love watching Kevin Durant play. It's going to be a bummer not having him around next season. Just as a side note, that's unfortunate no matter what team he was going to play on. I'd like to see Kevin Durant playing, at least at some point during the season. It sucks that we won't get to see that, and sucks even more for him. But Kevin Durant, you know, he had that famous quote in the playoffs, you know, I'm Kevin Durant. And then he went off on a tear and started looking like the best player in the league. And we were like, yeah, you're damn sure right. You are Kevin Durant. Is he still Kevin Durant? After a torn Achilles? I mean, I think that's the pertinent question, the one that we're all asking in the basketball world, basketball community, NBA, Twitter, so on and so forth. Is Kevin Durant still Kevin Durant? And honestly, it's something for the Warriors to consider. It's something for the Knicks or the Nets or whoever else is interested in him, whoever's offering him. It's something to consider. It's something for all of us to consider. And most importantly, again, and unfortunately, it's something for Kevin Durant to consider. And man, that makes this summer so much darker. So much darker. And we were excited about where's Kevin Durant going to play. Then even the what we thought was a slim possibility that the Warriors might run it back and he might stay there. What's going to happen? Now it's like, oh, man, we don't know where he's going to play, but we just hope he's going to be all right. We hope that he's still Kevin Durant when he comes back out there. We don't know. Klay Thompson tears his ACL in game 6. Puts up 30 points in 32 minutes, which is crazy. It's such a Klay Thompson type of thing to do. And then I believe it was a fast break. He's headed to the basket, goes up. Danny Green swats at him, gets his arm, but Klay just lands awkwardly. I mean, he lands on the type of play that he's probably done, oh, man, thousands of times. How many times do you think in Klay Thompson's life he's elevated towards the basket and come down on the ground, on his feet? How many times do you think he's done that? Thousands of times. And this just, for whatever reason, worst of luck, awkward landing towards ACL. Now, let's go ahead and give him his props for the Iron Man type of bravado that we know him to put out there. Dude gets hurt. They're taking him to the back. We go to commercial. By the time we get back from commercial, Klay Thompson is back and ready to knock down his free throws to leave out the possibility that he can, or to leave open the possibility that he can come back, that he's not done for the game. At the time, we didn't know what the injury was. The man came back, knocked down his free throws, reluctantly left the court again to go to the back, but told Steve Kerr that he'd only be gone for a couple minutes and that he'd be back. All of this on a torn ACL. Let's give the man his credit. I'm not Mr. Tough Guy up in here. These things are not always the most impressive things to me. This isn't like the, you know, the ideal or prime example of masculinity, but this is pretty impressive from an athletic standpoint, to be able to tolerate pain the way Klay Thompson does, to have the motor that Klay Thompson does, and to be as consistent just as a presence. Maybe not always his performance. For the most part, his performance is pretty consistent. But as a presence, Klay Thompson is about as reliable as it gets. I don't know if you can find two guys in the NBA who love basketball, who love hoop more than Durant and Thompson. Like, they're too good to play for anything less than max contracts. But these are the two of the guys that are stars who you get the impression would just be out there hooping for free if that's what life had come to for them. Like, if for some reason Durant or Thompson had to go get a regular job, these are the dudes that would just be at the Y for no particular reason, hooping you up. These are the guys that after they retire, you can totally see them just still. You can see them in the Big Three. MVPs of the Big Three. Ice Cube's League. So it's really unfortunate, really sad to see them out with injuries that could both keep them out and likely keep them out for most of, if not all of, next season. And especially in Durant's case, alter their future, change entirely what the rest of their careers look like, and more so for Durant. We'll see with Klay. But the free agency implications for Klay, like, we always anticipated that Klay, I know I was listening to his dad on some either radio or podcast several weeks ago, maybe at the beginning of the playoffs, saying that him and Klay don't talk much about free agency, but that he would be shocked if Klay did not re-sign in Golden State. Shocked. Joe Lacob has also come out, the owner of the Warriors, has also come out and said that he wants Klay to be a Warrior for life. He said that in the past. And that the injury, he said, according to Yahoo Sports, the injury doesn't change anything. So, like, the Warriors don't look at Klay differently, so they say. But does Klay look at the Warriors differently? You know, like, I don't think he does. And I'm sure he wouldn't come out and say such a thing. But when you look at how fragile all of this stuff is, how quickly all of it can turn, I don't know if the things that we thought would keep Klay Thompson there are still true or still work. Like, the idea of Klay Thompson saying, what are the reasons? Model of consistency, the success, the track record. He's got a legacy there. Like, it makes sense for him to be a Warrior for life or for him to want to. But if there's more money somewhere, if the Warriors play with his money at all, could Klay leave? He doesn't get hurt. He doesn't miss games. And so we're seeing that now, and perhaps he's seeing that now for the first time, that this is fragile. This is fleeting. Taking a step behind Curry and Durant, both in, you know, look, Klay doesn't have the biggest ego, but if they play with his money, you know, I could see him making a business decision. Maybe not. But it just seems like it's so much more in play now. These are things that we weren't considering a week ago. At least I wasn't. What does the final say about the Warriors? What does it say about the Warriors now? They went to 5 straight NBA finals. They won 3 of them. The ones that they lost, the 2 that they lost, were to a LeBron-led Cavs team that came back from 3-1, from down 3-1, and this Raptors team that we just saw. What does this say about the Warriors? Does this at all hurt their legacy as a dynasty? Do we still call them a dynasty, even though they only won back-to-back championships? They didn't win. They didn't have a three-peat. They didn't have two repeats. They haven't had at least 2 repeats yet, and it doesn't appear likely that they will do that. And as I just laid out, who knows what the future holds for them. This could be the end of their, at least, dominance. Not their relevance, but dominance. I mean, is this as great as we thought it was? I tend to lean yes. I still feel like when I watch this team, I have never seen anyone, any team play as freely, and as they just play such a smart game. The way they share the ball, the way they screen and free up shooters and cut and pass, and they defend. I mean, I think that's one of the really perhaps underrated thing about what the Raptors were able to do offensively, because we talk about the Raptors as a defensive team. They have Kawhi. They have other guys who can defend. But to be able to score, to be productive against this Warriors team that defends so well, it's an underrated characteristic of the Warriors. And they do all of these things so well. Best team that I have seen. And I do remember the last iteration of those Bulls teams. I don't remember, to be honest, the first three-peat. I do remember fairly well the second three-peat. This is the best team I've ever seen, still, to this day. But it does put a little bit of stink on it, right? Steph Curry, I thought, was pretty good, but the numbers show he did not shoot the ball very well in these playoffs. He did not. He played, with the exception of the Portland series, where he was phenomenal, averaged like 36 points a game, something like that. With the exception of the Portland series, he was not great. And a lot of people were thinking, especially when KD went out, that this would be the year where he gets to be the focal point and the finals MVP. He gets to finally put that last thing on his resume that's not there. He didn't do that. Had an opportunity to win or at the end of the game, in game six, had an opportunity at the end there, a pretty good look for by Steph standards, and missed it. They put up the graphic, 0 for 8 in the last 20 seconds of playoff game. Yikes. Not a great stat for the best shooter ever. This was an entertaining series. I enjoyed it, and I am excited to see how the results of this series ultimately changes the NBA down the line.